You're listening to City of Angels Recovery Radio. This is Saving Lives. I'm Allison Sahu, and I'm here with Davy Gold's family, who is sharing memories of Davy and talking about the benefit concert that will be held in his honor coming up this October.
David was a self-employed computer specialist whose passion since he was a teenager was music. David wanted to be a DJ in the worst way. So I helped him buy equipment, DJ equipment, and that those days they were vinyl record albums. Maybe you remember those. So we bought turntables, and he went to work as a DJ, and he eventually paid for all of his equipment. And he worked initially at a place in Hightstown called it was the Hightstown Bowling Alley, and next door was a Finnegan's nightclub. He was about 17 when he talked them into hiring him as their DJ, and he worked on weekends. And subsequently, WPST, I believe it was 97.5, started to broadcast from there, and David, at the age of 17, was on the radio with a mix show. All the while, DJing at parties and sweet 16s and later weddings and things like that. David became a Billboard reporter, where he would report to the Billboard magazine, the music magazine, how the various his opinion about the various pieces of music he was playing, and of course then Billboard listed the top 10 list of popular music. He did that, and then he worked himself into a recording studio. So he learned about the recording of music in recording studios, where he worked with some famous people as an intern. So he was really passionate about that, and later he went into the music promotion business. He lived in New York City. As he got older, he lived in New York City, went into music promotion for a record label called Strictly Rhythm, and then he helped create another label called Groovalicious as a record promoter. And DJ, he worked in numerous venues around New York City. As he became more and more well known, he worked in Europe. He worked in Montreal. He worked in Las Vegas, New Orleans, just to name a few.
South Atlanta. Beach.
Pardon me?
South Beach.
South Beach,
wow.
Miami, for several times there.
And he came back to this area. He came back home and made his living largely back here after doing that traveling.
Right. As he got older, he never felt that DJing was a sustainable way to earn a living, and so he worked in the computer business. So this was more or less a hobby of his, but he was very passionate about it. And to be honest, not until after he died, and all of these other people, when he was in the record promotion business, in New York City, he would send it. When he was a Billboard reporter, record producers and labels would send him music to play on his record shows, on his mix shows, so that he could evaluate them and let them know how he was doing. And when he was in the record promotion business for Strictly Rhythm, he would provide music to other DJs, and that's how he made such a connection with the DJs, many of whom are now, let me say, internationally famous.
And Davey became quite well known in his own right.
He did. He did, but he never really he never bragged about it. He never said anything about it yet. But we knew, you know, people just looked up to him for advice, for help, and they themselves he helped them launch their own careers. One of them was the son of Ozzy Osbourne.
Really?
Yes. He's a DJ performer that David, when he was managing the Conduit and Kathmandu, he would get gigs for. I'm sorry, I can't remember his first name, but for Osbourne's son.
No. But Dad, he also DJed with Danny Bonaducci, who is Danny from the Partridge Family.
Looking through all the memorabilia that David has collected all the years, I came across a magazine article written about him. And if I may, Allison, I'll just read a few sentences from it. Speaking about David, it says, he added award winner to his long list of credentials with the honor of Indie Label Promoter of the Year for 1998 and 1999 at the Billboard International Dance Music Summit in Atlanta. He also succeeded in earning nominations in 1997 and 1998 for Indie Label Promoter of the Year at the Winter Music Conference. I know that was in Miami. Davey has the notable success of working closely with visionary DJ, producer, and remixer Peter Rauhofer on giving birth to the Star 69 label. Further demonstrating his unstoppable drive, he has also planned and coordinated all social events for Groovalicious, all industry-related conventions, as well as working with and accommodating all Strictly Rhythm Groovalicious artists, including Ultranate, Venga Boys, Raina, Mindy Kay, and Barbara Tucker. Well, that's just a few things. It also talks about his, one more sentence. His remix and additional production credits consists of 9 number one Billboard singles, including Ultranate's Free and Found a Cure, SM Track's Got the Groove, Barbara Tucker's Everybody Dance, Brainbug's Nightmare and Rain. These are names that maybe not be familiar to us, but in the dance music world, they were very famous. Junior Vasquez, Razor and Guido present Vanessa Mitchell, This Joy, and Praxis featuring Kathy Brown's Turn Me Out, and two top ten Billboard singles. Clearly, there are no limits to what this brilliant talent is capable of and how far he will go, so keep watching. So that was from a magazine article I just found today.
You just found today, yeah.
I didn't even know you had that, Dad.
Oh, yeah,
David, I think as a family, besides my sister Jody, didn't realize how famous David actually was. He never really let on to that, you know. It was kind of weird. I mean, to have a brother that was kind of famous like that and to have no idea about it until I Googled his name. And, you know, to him, he was always David. So, you know, when we realized that we had to Google Davey and look up Davey Gold, if you Google that and you see the discography of his life and, you know, he comes up right away, it's just amazing. And, you never realize how famous he was until after all of this, but apparently he told my sister that he was. Right, Joe?
Yeah, he told me he was a big deal.
He was a big deal.
He was a big deal. And
He needed to impress the older sister.
Yeah, but we never really believed him from that stuff anyway.
He was a big deal to me. He was a very big deal to me. I was very, very proud of all of his accomplishments and his talents. He just never ceased to amaze me with his talents. I felt like he was a magician when it came to music and electronics, and he could fix anything, solve any problem.
What was he like as a brother and as a son?
Well, to me, he was the best brother anybody could ever ask for. He was one of my best friends in the whole world. He made me laugh. He made me cry. He was amazing, an amazing uncle to my three boys. He was always there for me. Maybe not physically, maybe, if I couldn't get in touch with him, I couldn't get in touch with him, but when he did call back and when I did have a problem, he was there emotionally for me. When he was sober, he was amazing. And then when he got out of rehab and I saw that David again that we missed so much, it came back to me about how much I just adored him. I adored him. Yeah,
he was great. I mean, even though he was our younger brother, he was the only brother. So it didn't matter if he was younger to us. He didn't act like he was younger to us. He would do anything for his sisters, anything in the world to keep us happy and safe and just anything. I mean, he really was a great brother, and so proud of him, and so blessed to have had him in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Did you spend a lot of time with him? What kind of things did you do with him?
We opened up a bar in Trenton, in the Trenton area, and he helped us with that. So we spent a lot of time with him on that. Plus, he did spend a lot of time with my children. With every time we had any kind of computer issue, he would come over, and I would dread calling him because he would be spending hours when it was just a 5-minute problem, but hours and hours on a computer because he'd have to delve into the situation and fix it to his
Right. He wouldn't give up. I was the odd man out because I live a little further, but I also talk about the computers. I had a Mac, so David was not as well versed in Macs. Later on, at first he was. So I remember just recently I called him and I had a problem. I had this bug, and he said, "Okay, I'm gonna sign onto your computer from home and I'm gonna fix it." So he said he did, and the next day I started getting these pop-ups again. I called him up and I said, "David, because Macs never have this problem." And he said, "Okay, I'm going to get back to you on that." And I didn't think that he really would, because sometimes, you weren't sure what that meant with David, but he did. He got back to me the next day, and he goes, "I got it." And this is after his rehab, and he was, feeling really good about himself. And he goes, "I got it." He said, "I'm signing on, and this is going to be it." He goes, "You're going to see. Your computer's going to be amazing." And he did. He signed on from home, and He got my computer up and running and exactly the way that it needed to be. But he would not give up on it until he fixed it perfectly. And I kept saying to David, "Don't worry, I'll just bring it into Apple Store." He's like, no, I got it. That's what he used to say. I got it, right, Jeff?
Yeah, he took it personally. He took any problem personally and took it to the next level. He had to fix it. People are missing him, right, Dad? That he worked on their computers and he taught them how to use their computers. They're missing him.
Oh, yeah. We live, Allison, we live in an adult community, gated community, with 387 homes. And I have to say that maybe 50 or 60 residents here called David every time they had a problem with a computer. And they are missing him something terrible right now.
He was the computer whisperer.
Yeah.
That is an important job. I can imagine they missed him. Yeah.
Yeah, but
was
but
that
not only,
like a was what, that a hobby for him or?
Well, it was the way he made his living.
Okay. Yeah.
But he also he loved it. Like he was so. It was his thing, you know. I mean, look, they say that if you do what you like, you'll never work a day in your life, and I don't think David ever did, really.
But
right?
The thing is that I think that the and I feel bad saying this, but the your neighbor's dad, the older people, also miss him because he would spend so much time at their house. He wouldn't just go fix their computer. He would get into their entire life, solve problems for them, like just talk to them.
Sit down, have milk and cookies with them.
Oh, they all loved him that way because he always spent so much time with them. And so he was just really a special, special person. He got into everybody's heart. Every single person that knew him, he got into their heart. I don't know one person, not one person that could say they did not like David. I don't know anybody.
He knew more about people here, our neighbors, than anyone, because he would take the time and talk to them. One neighbor was dying of pancreatic cancer, and he spoke to him. He spoke to him for hours about how he was feeling, and he told me, "Dad, he feels so blessed." He said Bill feels so blessed because he has the opportunity to say goodbye to people. But this is the kind of thing that David drew out of people. He spoke to everybody and anybody. And people just, you know, my neighbor said, I always wanted him to take more money. He wouldn't take any money for, you know, he not only fixed their computer, that wasn't it. He gave him therapy when he was there. And they loved him. And I really feel happy that, you know, living in a relatively new community, most people wouldn't know other people's children, but they all knew David, and I'm very happy about that, very pleased about that.
And they all loved him. I mean, they all loved him. He made every single person feel like they were the most special person in the world.
Right. That's why there were 500 people at David's funeral. And what did one say to you, Dad?
Oh, Doug, I'm not.
No.
Randall Hansen, a Trenton police officer, was a very good friend of David's. Randall had a party in his house every summer, and David would DJ the party for him because they were friends. And he came to me at the funeral. The funeral must have had at least 300 people there. He came to me at the funeral, and he says, you know, I thought I was David's best friend. I look around here, and I was the lowest man on the totem pole. That's how David made people feel, like they were the most important thing to him. And they were. Each one of them was.
Oh, and another thing is, he never judged anybody.
Oh, yeah. He would never say anything bad about anybody.
He wouldn't hear it if
anybody else was either.
He never judged anybody. The underdog, the person that just, you know, couldn't come out on top ever, he would fight for them. He would fight for them to get, you know, to feel good about themselves.
Well, but, I just want to add something about that that is related. In high school, there was a fella who, this from what I hear, I know he was a little bit nerdy and wasn't one of the cool crowd, so to speak. But David always treated him as if he were. And actually, this fella became quite successful. I think he wrote a book about his experience in Hightstown High, and David's name was in there under a pseudonym. I don't know the name of the book, and but I could find it because that person owns a rehab center in Fort Lauderdale. And when we were having trouble locating David into rehab, or David was having trouble, I should say, this fella Scott Abrams called him and said, David, you come down to Florida and spend as much time as you want here and rehab, and don't worry about the cost. And he did that twice, Allison. Again, it's just a reflection.
Mm-hmm. And he flew in for David's funeral, too.
Yeah, he flew in for David's. He also sent somebody to put him on a plane and get him down there.
Mm-hmm.
Really? So, because Davey had treated him with respect?
That's right. And he never forgot.
Yeah, he said, David always stood by me, and I'm here to stand by him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that really says a lot about the kind of person Davey was. It really does.
People are still coming out of the woodwork, Allison, writing to me on Facebook and saying, you don't know me, but I'm so-and-so, and David, he saved my life. One person wrote, he saved my life. I was going down a bad path, and he helped me, guided me into the right way. And and then one other person wrote that she got into a car accident, and Davey sat by her side in Florida. She was on her way to Florida to see him, and he sat, by her side after she was in an accident. And it was just very things that we didn't know about him.
Right, we had no idea about this other life of his until after all these people coming out of the woodwork and telling us stories about things
David,
that he's done.
David had gone to Burning Man a couple of times. I don't know if you know about that.
For everyone listening, could you, what is Burning Man?
Well, it's hard for me to explain because I don't know much about it either, but every year during the summer, thousands of people go into the desert in, if it's Southern California or
It's Colorado.
Colorado. They build a city there, and every person builds a camp to feature their own artistic abilities, and I don't know how else.
It's an art festival, full of helping people and love and not living off the land. It's all natural. You're not supposed to, bring anything that's going to pollute, and it's an amazing
experience. I think I've read there's like 50 or 60,000 people who go there now, and when they leave the desert, you can't tell that anybody was there. They call it a Burning Man because one of the major activities building this huge wooden man, huge, and at the end they set it afire, and that's the end of their conference. I don't know much else about it, but the reason
I say even it's like a community where everyone can come together, and it's without money, so everyone that has their skill or their talent, then that's what you bring. And I know that David, he brought his music. And they built, they call them like art cars, because it's a beautiful artistic structure that he had his DJ equipment on that somebody had built and brought, and he was able to use. And he had made CDs, so he made his mix that was just the perfect music for the events, and he handed it out to everyone and brought as many copies as he could. And that was, what you can listen to there, and it's what you take home. And, like, some people would have their food. You can just walk up to a tent, and you're welcome. It's a big family. And just to see a community that can come together in the middle of the desert, I think it's Black Rock City in Colorado.
Yes, that's where it is.
Yeah, so it's just an artistic expression, and just to see a community come together without money.
So he just handed out his CDs, didn't sell them, just handed them out, just to be generous.
Oh,
right, he would drive there. I think he did it. How many times did he go?
Twice.
Yeah, at least twice.
Twice, and he drove there, right?
He took our truck and our camper.
Mm-hmm.
And he went with his friend.
Right. Mm-hmm. But what I meant, the reason I brought that up was that people from Colorado had called me, sent condolences to who I didn't know. These were his good friends. Actually, he went out and one New Year's Eve, he DJed in a nightclub in Vail with the people that he had met out in at Burning Man. And they remained good friends.
Mm-hmm.
One of them called me a couple of times because he and his wife just had their first child, and David was, you know, so happy for him, congratulated him. And this was just about a week before David died, so it was a big shock to that family.
Mm-hmm. So he had a lot of friends everywhere.
He did. Really did. He
all over the world. London. They're calling me from London. China.
He traveled the spectrum, and he had all these friends from all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty funny and strange, you know, because like, I feel like every day that I'm on Facebook, actually, another picture or another memory or something else pops up.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. When I was reading that article, I mentioned one of the groups, one of the the music groups is called the Venga Boys.
Mm-hmm.
The Venga Boys, you recall a couple of years ago, there was a commercial for Great Adventure that featured an old man getting off a bus and then breaking into a dance. The music for that is the music is called... Let's Party, or We Want to Party.
We Like to Party.
Like to Party. That was the music that David won a gold label for. Because of the, in promoting that, that record sold, at least over 500,000 copies. It might have gone platinum after that, but he was awarded a gold album for that, which we have here. It's really quite impressive.
And that's a really big deal for a DJ.
Yeah.
The thing about David, you know, and we can go on and on about his talents and everything, but for the listeners out there, the thing about David that strikes us is that everybody knew what a phenomenal person and what a phenomenal heart he was, except to him. And I joked around that, and he said he was a big deal, and he was joking to me when he said that, and you know, it was a big deal, but he didn't realize how much everybody loved him. And it reminds me of Robin Williams.
Mm-hmm.
not knowing, not that he didn't know, but Robin Williams. And Robin Williams had a quote, it was on Facebook the other day, and saying that something about the reason why he makes people laugh is because he's so sad inside that he doesn't want anybody to feel like he does. And my brother made everybody laugh. He was so funny,
And so witty, like it was fast. It wasn't like, it, you know, he would think about it.
He could have been a stand-up comedian. He could have been, mm-hmm. if he, you know, that, because he was that funny. And like I said, my kids just feel his loss every day. So that to me, you know, I just, like my father said to me a few weeks ago, I wish he saw all this. I wish he knew just how much his loss meant or would mean to everybody. And,
right.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to think that maybe he does see it, you know, but...
But I wish he knew beforehand, and that's,
right.
that's that.
Well.
Yeah. He just never felt great about himself, and that's, I think, where this whole story turns, you know. We're talking about
tell.
All this great stuff about David, but obviously the story turns. And
You could tell the way we felt about him, and that's how everybody felt about him.
Mm-hmm.
Except him.
Except him. And
there was, beside us, a love of his life. And her name was Christiana Cortez. And she is here, and he loved her very, very much, and she loved him. and I think she should say a few words about Dave. This is I'm his mother, and I'd like to speak last, but I think Christiana should speak because she loved him so much. Here you go.
Hello.
Hi.
Christiana, how did you and Davey meet?
We met. He was actually DJing. The first time that we met, I went out with my girlfriends who were friends with him. Everyone was a fan of his, so they followed his music. And that was the first time that I met him. It was one of my friends' birthdays. And it was, you know, that was the introduction, the first time you see each other, and you'll always remember. And, you know, we talked a little bit, but he was working. He was always very, you know, very diligent in the job, but, yes, intense. Mm-hmm. So we saw each other again at their bar when I went with the same friends, actually, who were still following his music, and that was just when we hit it off. It was just so apparent. Just once met, we knew that it was right. It felt so right. Mm-hmm. And even though we had a few years in between us, we weren't exactly the same age, but
what's,
you know,
the
I
age
feel like
difference?
When you meet that right person, I didn't think that age really mattered.
That's very true. What's the age difference between you?
We have 18 years, actually. I'm 27. He was 45. We met three years ago, 24 and 42.
Mm-hmm. I was at the bar that night when you saw him, and he said to me, "You see that girl over there?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "I'm going to marry her."
Yep, he told me too, and it was supposed to be. It's hard to imagine that he's gone and that we won't have that life that we thought we would have. But I just, you know, I thought that we met each other at the perfect time, and it seemed like fate on both of our ends that, you know, I don't think that at that time he realized how much of a problem he had, and I think that coming into his life, we worked through it, and, you know, it came out. It's not something you can hide, and we were going to meetings, and, you know, I would attend the Naranon meetings, and I would go to the open meetings with him, with the AA and NA, and, you know, I thought that we were doing everything that we could, and we were. I mean, it was day by day, and every day can be a struggle, but, you know, he was successful in recovery for a long time. We had 3 years together. I can't imagine that it's only 3 years. I really thought that we were just starting out and that it would, you know, just bloom into what it was supposed to be. But
what's your favorite memory of him?
Oh,
I know you have a lot. I'm sure you have.
His personality, how loving he was. He showed everyone love, and you just felt like the most amazing person. But to me, he made me feel like the most amazing thing in the world, and I never knew.
Well, he put you on a pedestal, Christiana.
He did. He was wonderful, and I returned it as much as I could. And, you know, we walked together, and I thought that, you know, I thought that we would make it through. I thought that we could get through anything together. You know, maybe you can't get through on alone. It was, you know, it's a very difficult walk in recovery. Every day will be a struggle, but it's those people that are around you that help you through and hold your hand, and, you know, we'll always see the good that you have in you still, even if he couldn't see it. He was wonderful. And I wanted a time that we could just enjoy each other. You know, it would always be in recovery. It's never going to go away. But I thought that, you know, with more time in recovery, things would get easier and we would be able to have the life that, you know, that he should have had, just to get married and to have children.
Did he want that? Did you guys talk about marriage?
Oh, yes. Yes. Mm. He wanted kids. He would have been the best father ever. Amazing. Mm-hmm. He loved cats. He had cats throughout his life, which, oh my gosh, he loved them so much. Casey and our cat, we called it Kitty. But he was so loving animals to everyone, and he should have been able to have the gift of children, and it kills me that he won't. But, you know, he did have an amazing life in the time that he had. It's just that he should have had twice as long, and it's just the addiction that took over above all the good things. That's what won out.
Mm-hmm.
It is. That's the disease, and that's the difficult thing to accept.
Do you think he had any inkling of what was coming? Do you think that he saw his mortality in any way, or do you think it was just a total accident, complete surprise?
Well, I think it was a total accident, but we, just in the stage of addiction that he was in, we knew how serious it was, and we talked about it daily, that it's, you cannot relapse because it is your life in your hands. And he did know the severity, and he wanted recovery. He wanted it so bad. And we were doing the meetings, and you even just incorporating into your lives just to, I would like read to him. Just if you were cooking dinner, I would try to read the Naranon books and stuff, just so you have it surrounding you and it is embedded in your head, because it needs to be. You can't go a second without thinking of it. Beginning stages of recovery. So he knew how serious, but it's just so strong. And yeah, you are powerless over the drug.
Right.
That one relapse. And it took him.
It's all it takes is one, And they say, oh, well, it was bad heroin, but I think I heard somebody say that there really is no such thing as good heroin, so.
Mm-hmm.
There's really nothing that could have saved him. It was bad, and it was laced, but it like we say, there was no such thing as good heroin. So it's all it took was one. And I did think David used to always say, I'm not going to die. It's the way he used to say it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, David, I don't want you to die. It's like, I'm not going to die. But,
He always researched everything,
right?
He
was really smart. And Jody said to me, I remember right after he died, Jody said to me, he never thought that he was going to die because he didn't look like a drug addict. He didn't look like it. And we think that he'd have to start looking really bad and losing his teeth and looking like he was homeless before he was going to die. But that's not the case, Spoke to the medical examiner after all of it, and he said, he was in David's condo, and David just didn't fit the bill. He just said that he just didn't look like the type. And I thought to myself after that, that's nice to hear that, but really, what is the type? I don't know. Addiction does not discriminate. Mm-hmm. So, it's nice that to hear such a thing, that my brother was kept his apartment great and it was clean and it was beautiful, and you look at his pictures and you just never thought that he would be the kind that would do such a thing, or get addicted to drugs. But I think, like you say, just addiction does not discriminate. It doesn't matter who you are, how old you are, how much money you have, or what religion you are, how you're raised. It just doesn't matter.
What I say to people is, if it can happen in our family, it can happen in anybody's family.
Right, exactly.
Because
the other thing is, another thing we didn't know until the funeral is that people used to look at us almost like we were the Brady Bunch. We were just this happy-go-lucky family that has, the three kids and station wagon and, the parents. We used to do stuff on weekends and go on vacations and do stuff. But, and we had the house that they entertained at with the pool in the backyard, and it was fun, and, it was just, people used to say they wanted to be part of our family.
The really cool older sister. You had the really cool older sister, too.
Yeah, me too. But, we didn't know these things about ourselves or about our family and what people thought, but, like I said, if it could happen to our family, I keep thinking back over and over again. I can't wrap my head around it, because I keep thinking, this did not happen in my family. This is not true.
This doesn't happen to us. It happens to somebody else. And
right. It doesn't happen to people like us.
Well, we got a big taste of reality.
Well, I'm going to talk for a little bit. My name is Ronnie, and I'm David's mother. I wanted to talk last. I idolized David. He was my youngest child and my only son. And what I always thought is what's very important was to make your child feel good about himself. But I don't think really David felt good about himself. I don't think he gave himself credit for anything that he did. It was just something that he did. And he was the most lovable child, so interested in music from the day he was born. I remember when he was 4 years old, he got on an organ and started to play The Sting from the
movie. Yeah.
And he was just talented and used to listen to Simon and Garfunkel and American Pie and all those old songs. And he was just loving his music all the time. And I just loved him just the way he was. He was just a perfect son. He was a wonderful son, and he was a wonderful brother to my daughters, and a wonderful uncle to my grandchildren, and a wonderful boyfriend to my Christiana, who I love so much and thought that this was going to be my daughter-in-law. They were very much in love, and he told me the same thing. I'm going to marry her someday. And I believed it because he really did love her. Whether he loved himself enough, I don't know. I don't think that he did this on purpose. I think that it was an accident. I think that he told me, I saw him on the Sunday before he died. He came over for dinner.
And he died on a Tuesday, just so you know.
Over on Sunday, and he said, Mom, you have to understand that I'm powerless over this. I am powerless over this. And I understand that. I was so shocked and so taken back. I don't think I will ever, ever feel any better than I feel now. I feel an emptiness in my heart and my soul and my body for David, who I loved so much and who his dad said to me the other day, I miss him coming in the door and brightening up our day. Because that's what he did. He brightened up our day. If he came in, he brightened up our day. And I just loved him so much, and I respected him, and he was my whole world beside my other children, and I miss him so very much. But drug addiction is a terrible thing. It's a terrible, terrible thing. It's worse than a cancer. It just eats you up inside and doesn't leave your body. And we thought that we had our David back when we went to see him at rehab. He sounded like his old David, his old self, and not like his evil twin that he was when he was using. And I would always watch out for that because I had a brother that died of drugs as well. And maybe I feel a little guilty about that, that it was in my family as well. But I just couldn't believe that he was addicted because I watched them so carefully through their childhood and growing up. I did watch them so carefully, mm-hmm. but I never really knew that he was addicted to drugs until a few years ago. And I just wish that more people would be involved and know more about this horrible disease because it is a disease. It's just a terrible disease that happens, and you don't have control over it. They don't even have control over it. And until they get into a program and stay at that program for a long, long, long time, they will always be drug addicts. And I just wish he was here today, and I miss him very, very much. And I love him, and I kiss his picture every night and hold it close to my heart and tell him how much I love him. And that's all I have to say right now.
Thank you so much for sharing those memories. Thank you. Thank you. And you all are doing a wonderful tribute to him on October 10th. I looked at the Facebook invite just before we started this show, and I see that more than 200 people are already saying that they're going to come. I'm sure there'll be many more. So that will go a long way towards honoring his memory.
And the money is going to City of Angels.
Yes, that's wonderful.
You know, I think that this is what he would have wanted us to do. I know it in my heart.
Yeah, we you know, to honor him this way, and you know, having all of his DJ friends there and actually spinning his records, you know, is the best way that we could honor him. You know, he would have loved it. He would have loved to have just a big party, you know, in celebration of his life rather than, you know, mourning his life, but just to celebrate who he was, and this is who he was. So all of his friends are coming from far, and we're hoping it's going to be a nice turnout, and we hope for it to be a good night.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Yeah. Well, before we say goodnight, is there anything else about Davy that that anyone would like to say?
Well, I think we covered him pretty well. There was a short time where when I retired, I was in the pharmaceutical business. And we went into, he was looking for a solid way to earn a living. We went into the management recruiting business. And we both got trained, and we opened a very nice office in Princeton. And we recruited in the scientific research, quality control, and regulatory affairs in the pharmaceutical business, a highly technical field. And David, of course, knew nothing about that, but he learned it very quickly. And he would on his own and MDs, PhDs, it didn't matter, engineers, and keep them on the phone for such a long time that I was so impressed with him. But the funny thing is that he was my boss when we were working together. And every once in a while, he would say, "What are you sitting there for? Pick up the phone."
I didn't know he was your boss, Dad.
He was my boss. And what a great quality time I spent with him as in that it was a totally role reversal. And I was just so proud of him. So whatever road or whatever path he took, he was always very serious, very intense.
But he also loved us, his family, and Christiana with his whole self.
He did, his whole self.
Yeah.
So,
thank you all.
We look forward to seeing everybody who can come on October 10th, City Garden. It'll be great. Thank you so much, Allison, for this opportunity.
Thank you for having us, Allison.
Thank you all for coming out. Thank you for sharing your memories of Davy. And I know it's going to be a great turnout on the 10th. This is Saving Lives on City of Angels Recovery Radio. And see you next week.